You are listening to Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast, episode 14 for Monday, March the 14th, 2022. JJ Sefton and CBD, and we are joined today by our special guest, a very special guest, Michael Walsh, a journalist, author, and screenwriter. He was for 16 years the music critic and foreign correspondent for Time magazine, and he's also a writer of both novels as well as nonfiction works. His latest book is called Last Stands, a study of military history from the Greeks to the present, published by St. Martin's Press. And he's editor of Against the Great Reset, 18 Essays Contra, the New World Order, coming this fall. And he's also the editor of the conservative website, The Pipeline. Michael Walsh, welcome. It's great to have you.
Hey, JJ. It's great to be on with you guys, and you too, CBD.
Yeah, it's a pleasure having an actual author. We now have two on the podcast, so it's great. Yeah, I'm excited.
Wow, we're getting more literary by the minute here. Okay.
So let's jump right in. JJ sent me Michael's article that was posted this morning on The Pipeline, The Specter That Haunts America. And he punched all the right buttons for me. What I enjoyed most of all about it was the unabashed demonization of the Democrat Party. And I think that's something that needs to happen in the United States a lot more, this ridiculous desire to be collegial in the country and to have normal and comfortable relationships with our political enemies is ridiculous, because they hate us and we need to start hating them. And Michael's article is a good start.
Well, thank you. It's an outgrowth of something I felt for a long time about this thing. When I was writing under the name David Kane for National Review, talk about being public enemy number one there for a while, I wrote as a lunatic lefty screenwriter in Hollywood with a porn star girlfriend named Ginger, who was having an affair with John Thomas, the pool boy, right under his nose. palatial pad in Echo Park. But Dave said at one point, think of us as what we really are, a criminal organization masquerading as a political party. And that's been a phrase that's been picked up elsewhere in the blogosphere. And I think it's the best characterization of them. I wrote a book called The People Versus the Democratic Party for Roger Kimball's Encounter Books, and I linked it in my piece today. It's a little pamphlet, but it's everything you need to know about the sordid history of these miserable sods. From the moment that the vice president of the United States killed one of the founding fathers of America, that would be Aaron Burr for you guys keeping score at home. He also founded Tammany Hall and gave us a century and a half of misery, political chicanery, and cheating, which is where the Democrats, win their victories. And it goes right up to the present time. So we're just seeing the result of it. Honestly, guys, I don't know why, and I think Lincoln might have outlawed them had he survived the full week after the surrender at Appomattox before a Democrat actually assassinated him. So this is how they operate. Why we should treat them as fellow citizens and political rivals rather than mortal enemies is absolutely beyond me. So I tried to get out a little bit of that at the piece today.
Well, CBD and I were talking before we went on the air here, and it's one of the great quandaries that I have, and I know you touched upon the great question of to Trump or not to Trump in 2024, which we'll get to in a second. I'm just at that point in my realization of things is that, and I've stated, America seems to be at this point, it's almost like we're a zombie. We're zombies. We're dead. We're undead, and we just don't realize it. So we sort of go through the motions of having regular order and elections and debate and this and that and all these kind of things, where we've seen that. And from my point of view, and I'm going to state it right out loud, the Democrats basically stole the election in 2020. And when they're not stealing elections, they're doing everything they can to subvert the Constitution, whether they have crooked judges, hacks in black, as I called them, on the Supreme Court, who will just overlook the rule of law when a lawsuit happens, or the bureaucracy passing completely unconstitutional regulations and so on and so on. So while we're trying to deal with things and play by the Marquis of Queensbury rules, these guys have brass knuckles, guns, and knives, and they're out to beat the living crap out of us no matter what we do. So how do we deal with this enemy when we're not willing to, and I'm not promoting violence in any way, shape, or form, but how do you use the rule of law, or what was the rule of law, and a constitution which is all but dead, in order to regain a country from an enemy that has done everything for the last 200-odd years to try to subvert that constitution?
Yeah, well, that's why that party should have been outlawed. Sorry, CBD, go ahead.
You don't use the Constitution. You use their tactics against them. Alinsky was a brilliant man. He was our enemy, but the fact that he was our enemy should not disallow any of his techniques.
Well, I wrote a book on that subject. It's called Rules for Radical Conservatives. It's under my name, David Kahane, because I wrote it from his lunatic lefty point of view. Mm-hmm. And it was basically a giant taunt, like, you idiots. You know, why don't you use our own weapons against us, for Christ's sake? It's like Jeff Goldblum in Independence Day saying, hey, geez, they're using our satellites against us, when he figures out what the aliens are up to. These people are aliens. They hate you. I'm 72 years old. I have watched this movie every day of my life since I went to college in 1967. They have never changed. Not once. They never say, I'm sorry. If they get beat, they pick themselves up off the ground and they go right back like rust or termites in tunneling under the edifices of civilization. They are flat out bad people. And there's no point in treating them as if we just disagree, because we disagree on, it's an antithetical relationship. It's not a question where you can agree or disagree at this point. And now they've shown their true colors. Now you guys can all, you're younger than I am, you can see what they are. They don't even pretend to believe in the Constitution anymore. They want it gone. So how do you deal with that?
Well, you use the young firebrands in the Republican Party, and you know, there are probably a list of 8 or 10 of them who have taken their gloves off and are punching back, and they are not embarrassed to punch back, and they're not put off by the media using Democrat talking points. And this is a perfect segue into the best of them, and that is the governor of the state of Florida. DeSantis is superb at deflecting their attacks and redirecting them, really. And he's not embarrassed. He'll say what he wants, and he will defend it, and he will attack the soft logic of the media when they go after him. And there has to be more of that. There have to be thousands of DeSantises in this country for us to have a chance of recovering.
Yeah, they do. I met him when he was a congressman and had lunch with him with several other people. And I was very impressed. He was a little unpolished at that point. He's gotten much smoother, but he's pugnacious and he's got a resume that I don't think the Democrats could come close to equaling. Not only, you know, he's a college, almost pro level athlete. He was in the Navy. He graduated from Yale. He'd be the ideal lefty if he was a lefty, but he's not. He's, thank God, he's on our side, and I'm terribly impressed with him. Sorry, go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, I was going to say that, you know, we're talking about, and these guys are great. Believe me, I love Ron DeSantis. I think he's fantastic, and I love a lot of the few people that we have on our side. But number one, you have the GOP itself. We talked about the Democrat Party, and we have the GOP, though, which is, as some people call them, the stupid party. But at this point, they're not stupid. They're colluding with the Democrats. They're totally in collusion with them. They believe every much in the New Deal as, well, the Democrats now believe in the 5-year plan. Forget about the New Deal. But they just think that they're better managers of the big bureaucratic central, you know, overwhelming authority that rules our lives. And they give you a tax cut here and there, and you're supposed to, like, give them money and go on the cruise with them, you know, with Bill Kristol and whoever else. But that's
interesting what you just said.
Yeah,
and the thing is that is collapsing among the Democrat Party. They used to be able to pretend to be minimally competent, but the wheels have fallen off that wagon. They are obviously incompetent, and I think the American people are beginning to see that. Biden, of course, is both senile and incompetent, but the people that he has chosen, or that Kalorama has chosen for him, are worthless at managing the country. They're worthless at governing the bureaucracy, and it's becoming increasingly obvious. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say, along with the GOP, you know, here the other part of the problem is you have, and this is going back to what I was talking about of America completely overturned right now. You have every element of government, the bureaucracy, which is 99.999% purely leftist, that will do things against you. You have the judiciary, which is certainly extremely, which cannot be, you know, trusted in overturning things, certainly at the Supreme Court level, if not at the lower courts. So, and this is what we saw with Donald Trump, is everything he tried to do, And it's amazing what he was able to accomplish. Even still, yeah. He did it by himself. But every time he had this, as Michael points out in his wonderful essay, you had saboteurs at every level, basically doing almost seditious or treasonous acts in not implementing the executive orders or not carrying out the laws in order, you know, that he wanted to do. And now it's just, you know, so how do you overcome this? You know, you don't overcome it. You have to somehow, quote unquote, overthrow it.
Well, the thing is that Ron DeSantis has tremendous skills in that respect, and that is that he understands a little bit, at least, how Congress works, and he is comfortable managing a large bureaucracy. Trump came into the White House in January of 2017 knowing nothing about the true nature of the bureaucratic mess that is Washington, and yeah. It beat him. Ron DeSantis, if many things happen, many good things happen, and he becomes a president, in January of 2025, he will enter the White House knowing full well what is coming and having the tools to combat it.
Well, that's true. I was involved with the Trump White House on a certain level, backing and forthing. And one of the first things that I warned them about early, I think it was February of 17, was not to trust the media. And in particular, don't trust the New York Times. And in particular, don't trust Maggie Haberman. And I went on my speech about Maggie Haberman. And one of them, I won't name any names, put his hand up and said, wait a minute, you don't understand something. The president likes Maggie Haberman. They have each other's cell phone numbers. They talk like boyfriend and girlfriend deep into the night because he never sleeps, right? I said, she is a viper. And they said, he's not going to hear you on this because he knew her when she was at the Daily News and at the New York Post in New York City when he was a, you know, builder playboy. And he trusts her. Well, now he doesn't trust her anymore. But the problem was you could not get this through their heads that every single person they encountered was a potential enemy. And that includes the people that around the White House were known as the Democrats. You can guess who they might be. Jared and Ivanka, yes. Congratulations, kids.
Exactly.
They were called the Democrats. And so we'd have conversations over in the old EOB or in the White House itself, and they would say, that's a great idea if you can get it past the Democrats. What turned out, you know, those two turned out to be the real viper in his breath. And it wasn't until the end of the first term that they got new people into the presidential personnel office. And they were looking very aggressively for new people to come in and help them. And I spoke to them about something, and they were all excited. And I said, what took you so long? I have been coming in here for 4 years. You know who I am. You've been following me as a writer for a decade or more. But they're only now getting around to realizing they needed allies inside that White House instead of enemies. That is why Trump lost. Yet you can say it was stolen to a certain extent, but as I say, the Democrats always steal everything that's not nailed down. If a Democrat comes to your house, check your silver after they leave. That's just who they are. They're just their nature. They're scorpions.
I would say your dog is pregnant and your garbage
that's
has been
right.
stolen, but that's it's a punchline of a racist
yeah,
joke.
Exactly.
I better not
well, let's not go down that road. But my point is they were defenseless against the onslaught. And I knew something was up because the first thing that the Democrats did was try to get rid of, and they succeeded, getting rid of Mike Flynn. And I thought, okay, this tells me a lot about these people because Flynn was the person who was, I remember he was an Obama hire, not a Trump hire originally. And he was dead set against the Iran deal because he knows exactly what's going to happen to Israel and other places when Iran gets the bomb. It'll look like Titus came through Jerusalem again and completely demolished it. And that goes back to what? AD 90, right? I mean, this is where that's going. And they had to get rid of Flynn because he knew where too many bodies were buried because he had been in a Democrat administration and he knew who the malevolents were. But as to your point, CBD, about how stupid they are, look at this Blinken character at State Department. Have you ever seen a greater doofus in your life? Well, there's John Kerry. He gets the
trophy.
Well, God, but I mean,
I understand your point.
Yeah, Yeah, we're lousy with doofus. I mean, my God, we're lousy with doofuses. I mean, we have an embarrassment of riches in that department. But I mean, the State Department has always been, you know, you could say that to a certain extent, at least going back, let's say, to Cordell Hull, even to World War II. I mean, yes, they have an intelligence about them, but their prime motivation was and always, and with Roosevelt is not necessarily. I don't know. I could even argue that, but even now, let's say after World War II, it was keeping and maintaining this globalist attitude of a world community and so on and so forth, and America counterbalancing all that. At least you had sort of people whose Ivy League degrees, perhaps they merited it, although they were completely wrong. Now you have chuckleheads like, and she's not in the State Department, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who I call, you know, wonderfully titty-caca, because it matches. Yeah. You know, I mean, just she has an economics degree from Boston University, and it's not worth the paper it's printed on. None of these people have. I mean, what is it? Ben Rhodes, the guy's a failed screenwriter. All of these, they're just completely clueless. So I'm going off on a tangent.
Fairness to screenwriters. Every screenwriter is a failed screenwriter. Yes. We work very hard, and some of us are lucky enough to get a movie made. I was lucky enough to get a movie made that was the highest rated movie in the history of the Disney Channel. And the highest single program in the history of the Disney Channel. So that was a lucky shot right out of the box. But it's tough to.
It's oh, come on. You got to give us the name.
Oh, Cadet Kelly. I thought you guys knew that. Kelly.
What was it called?
Cadet Kelly.
Cadet Kelly?
Sorry.
Wow. Yeah. I'll look it up. It wasn't on your little blurb. I would have gladly. But now, of course, Disney, it has to be sort of now, I don't know, Space Cadet Kelly with the long nails and transsexual Kelly.
Yeah, well, it would
Kelly
be transgender or... Kelly, that's for sure.
transgender
Well, Kelly. You know, the business has changed. It's a tough business. But
yes,
I get a lot of this from the left, too. So I write a piece about, you know, I was behind the Iron Curtain between 85 and 91. I was in Berlin when the wall came down. I was in Russia when Chernobyl blew up. I think I've got a certain amount of authority on this. I speak fluent German, blah, blah, blah. And I get from the left, some music critic is trying to tell me about geopolitics. Yeah, right. Like a music critic. This is their attitude, though. They sneer at you no matter what you do. So all you can do is, I used to say to the young screenwriters in Hollywood when we still had Friends of Abe, I would say, they'd say, what do we do about them? I said, punch them in the face. Try that. I grew up in the Marine Corps. My father was a Marine Corps war hero. He was at the Chosin Reservoir. You know, we had bayonet practice in our garage when we were kids. Seriously. I can gut you guys in 2 seconds flat. You just be careful. And his attitude towards bullies was, don't let them bully you. Punch them in the face. And that's what I meant to say to the screenwriters. Maybe not physically, but go right back at them. And so many times they'd say, we want to write a conservative movie. I say, don't write a conservative movie. Write a good movie. It'll be conservative because you wrote it. But don't put all kinds of stuff in that you think is going to appeal to conservatives because it'll be a bad movie. But I'm tired of going over the top because I'm out of the closet here in Friends of Abe. Everybody knows where I stand. I'm not hiding. And I say, okay, guys, charge. And then I look back and I'm in the middle of no man's land getting eviscerated by German machine gun fire. And there's not a single guy behind me. Well, we're kind of scared. We don't want to like lose our career. What career? You don't even have a career, for Christ's sake.
You know, something, this is a lesson, and this goes right back to what we were talking about with Ron DeSantis, and whether you love or hate her or whatever, Marjorie Taylor Greene or Louis Gohmert or, you know, Matt Gaetz. Forget it. Screw these people. Just go. Just tell them your ideology stinks. You're raping our children, mind, body, and soul. There is no white supremacy. Screw you, and to hell with your racism card. And you still have black people in chains. Don't be afraid of doing. This is the strategy.
Yeah, I think that's the only way to go. But we need guys like you. We need guys younger than you. I was surprised and delighted to find out that DeSantis is only 43 years old. I mean, this gets it back to the question of Trump versus DeSantis, which I think we want to talk about.
Can we hold for
one second?
Because we're running a little long. Let's take a little break. We got Michael Walsh, the great Michael Walsh, the great CBD, the not so great JJ Sefton. Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks. We'll be back in a minute. And we're back with Michael Walsh and CBD. J.J. Sefton here with the Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks podcast. I think we were talking about 2024, and the question is, to Trump or not to Trump?
Well,
that's the question.
Yeah, and I'm 100% on board with Ron DeSantis. I think Michael and I agree. My reservations about Trump are they're significant, unfortunately. I think he is best as the elder statesman of the Republican Party, dragging it into some semblance of sanity. He's going to be he's 1 year younger than Biden, and Biden is senile. Yeah. So, you know, he'll be pushing 80 in 2025.
Yeah, he'll be 78 at the time of the election.
Yeah. America needs youth. And I think America's realizing that youth is more important at this point. Just one look at the scum, the old sclerotic scum in Washington, will show them that. And I think a more significant thing is that the reason Trump wants to run, or is making noises that he wants to run, is ego-driven. He was beaten. He doesn't like that. He doesn't like to lose. Maybe there's a little bit of sense of payback. And I'm not sure that's a reason to become the president of the United States. And that is why DeSantis is number one on my dream slate. I'm going to ask Michael, put him on the spot. Who's the number two on that ticket?
Oh, on the DeSantis ticket?
Yeah.
Oh, I got it for you.
Okay.
And you mark my words, I'll be right. Because, by the way, I'm always right. That's something you guys need to know about. If I was a girl, I'd be named Cassandra. Tulsi Gabbard.
I swear to God, as God is my witness, I was going to say that and kind of like, half-joking. But
I think it's a fascinating choice.
You cannot beat that ticket.
Yeah.
She already eviscerated Kamala, eviscerated her. The Republican ticket would be young. It would be fresh. And I've got a lot of people on my Facebook page. My army sometimes gets restive and a little bit rebellious. And like Caesar, I have to go into them and say, Quirites, you know, which means citizens, not soldiers. And then they go, oh, no, we want to be back in the army. Okay, so here's the deal. She's a lefty. Like, I don't know what she is. She's from Hawaii. She's a Democrat. So was Trump for 30 years, for Christ's sake. And I told you at the time, only a Democrat could beat Hillary Clinton, and Trump was that guy. So I think Tulsi would be really good. And what her policy positions are, let's face it, we're just talking military strategy here. All we want to do is win. I don't care if she eats babies for breakfast. I don't care. Right now, she has to be the one that looks good next to DeSantis and brings votes to that. Because people will say, well, Trump, you know, he got 72 million votes. And I say the other guy got 80. And however many of those were fraudulent, it wasn't 80. And he got enough people to come out and vote against Trump. And DeSantis will not have that. He'll have a certain base that hates all Republicans. That's kind of a smallish base, though. Trump was able to motivate more people to vote against him than to vote for him. And if we don't face up to that, I'm with Bill Barr on this one. If we don't face up to that, we're going to spin our wheels arguing about what happened 4 years ago when the next fight is three a year ago, but the next fight's 3 years from now. So I'm kind of a radical on this one.
No, I don't think you're radical at all. I agree with you completely. I think that your point.
I will say this about Tulsi Gabbard is the fact that she, forget about, you know, eviscerating Kamala Sutra, whatever her name is. I mean, the fact that she eviscerated not her but Pierre Defecto, Romney,
and he did it again.
She totally destroyed him. Yeah. And for that alone, I would say, you know something, I gotta give her a look. I mean, you know, coffee cake complexion and everything else. But
he called her a traitor, which I thought was a very interesting charge against a sitting.
Meanwhile, isn't Romney's son in cahoots with Hunter Biden? Isn't Romney also, you know, he's going on and on about Ukraine and all this kind of stuff. I got to believe that this bio lab, whatever is going on there, he's got to have his hand in that. He's got to have his hand in all of this stuff. He's between his, I forgot the name of his, whatever his hedge fund was way back in the
Bain
day.
Bain Capital.
Yeah, Bain of our existence, Wolf Bain. Yeah. You know, I mean, you got to believe he's tied into this graft up to his neck. So anyway, for him to call her a traitor, give me a break.
Somebody pointed out on Twitter, she's only a traitor if our country's Ukraine. And I don't think our country is Ukraine, right? I mean, we're Americans here. We have no dog in this fight. And she went right after Mutt today and tore him apart, which I like about that girl's got spunk.
Yep.
And she's the other problem with the right is that they won't take friends where they can find them. This sort of purity is lunacy. So I say to them, you don't like Greenwald. You think he's gay and he's married to a Brazilian and he's adopted. You love Glenn Greenwald. Stop it. You don't like Matt Taibbi? You love Matt Taibbi. He's on your side. I've said for years Bill Maher is actually a closet conservative when it comes to his own life. There are certain things that he likes and he wants to defend. They happen to be sort of lefty lifestyle things. But he's been red-pilled. If you've been listening to him lately, we won't accept a friend in a fight. Good Lord, that's just plain stupid. And I don't know if Tulsi Gabbard's ever going to switch parties. But I think she'd be an awfully tough vice presidential candidate. I really do.
Well, that's the ironic thing right now is that the most conservative people that we have right now, if you want to just
they're all
from,
on
from
the
me,
left.
From they're all it's freaking Joe Manchin. It's Kristen Sinema, Kinky Boots.
We
I mean, Kristen, when she won, I was like, oh my God, it's one of these crazy psycho. What are we going to do? She and Manchin, whatever their motivations may be or whatever they may be doing behind the scenes or whatever else, they stopped, at least for the time being, this multi-trillion dollar nail in the coffin of America forever and ever, if we haven't been nailed in the coffin
their,
as
their
this.
Motivation but, is very, very clear, and that is re-election. And you know something?
Re-election, exactly.
They're on our side.
But that's what
100% correct. They're on our side. Let's take them. Let's hug them. Let's bring them into the fold. I don't care.
But that's I know. Doing it I agree with you, and that
for bad reason.
Totally. Well, that's the whole thing. I totally agree with you. That's what the great Milton Friedman said. It's electing it, making it politically profitable for the wrong people to do the right thing. So, and that's politics. Whether we love it, hate it, and we do hate it, it is what it is. So, thank God we have some people. And meanwhile, the GOP is going after someone like a Rick Scott, whether you like him or don't like him or whatever. And he's got his 14-point plan, and there are some very good points in that plan. And for Mitch McConnell to sort of start railing against him, hey, look. I'm a hate. McGirdle is a total chucklehead, and he's a creature of the swamp, bar none. And I mean, okay, great. He gave us these wonderful judicial nominees for Trump, and what have they proven themselves to be? Meds a Mets on the most important
McConnell
thing.
McConnell is our favorite punching bag on this podcast.
I despise him. I've said to people, when McConnell was running against Allison Lundergan in Kentucky. What was it, 6-8 years ago? When the Republicans took back the Senate, I said the ideal outcome is Republicans take back the Senate and Yertle the Turtle loses. And then you have a new Republican leader. This guy is horrible. He's neck deep in the swamp. Obviously, his entire personal life is devoted to swampitudinousness. And he's just horrid. So he's a bad guy. But, CBD, you made a point. We've got this geriatric group of lunatics and criminals running the country. Nancy Pelosi's brother, this is one of my favorite stories because I love Democrat history so much. Her brother, Franklin Delano Roosevelt D'Alessandro, was arrested for statutory rape. They kept two girls aged 13 and 11 in a house in Bollemer, him and a bunch of paisans, and they raped them for a week. He skated. Because his daddy was mayor of Baltimore. He was then indicted for perjury because he was as perjurious as Jussie Smollett the other day. Smollier, as Chappelle calls him. And he
juicy galore.
Juicy fruit, somebody said. I'm just reporting. I'm the reporter here. And he beat the perjury rap, too. Nancy's mother was involved in some very hinky, parking garage stuff with guys named Dominic. She comes from a crime family.
Oh, yeah.
And she is the Speaker of the House of the United States of America. Biden is ancient. She's ancient. Yertle is ancient. Since when did geriatrics become sexy? We got to get rid of them all. They're just too old. And I speak as a guy in my 70s now. I wouldn't want to do that job. But I'm sure glad to see people like DeSantis who are in their 40s and 50s. If they want to do that job, that they're in the prime of their life to do it.
Well, before we move on to another topic, I have one more suggestion. And for Chief of Staff in the DeSantis administration, Richard Grenell.
Well, Rick's a friend of mine. He wrote for me at Breitbart. When we started, you know, I was one of the first four founding editors of Breitbart with Andrew. And Rick is a very good man. I went, in fact, to see him in Berlin when he was ambassador to Berlin. Berlin's my old hometown. It's actually what I think of as my hometown. And it was a great pleasure to see him do so well. He's an excellent man. He's a brilliant man. He's a trustworthy guy. He's absolutely great. I'd love to see him in a next Republican administration.
Yep.
All right, let's take a little bit of a break. We will be back with Michael Walsh and CBD. This is the Kutchin Newsletter Speaks podcast. Back in a flash. Next on the Hip Parade, while everyone is paying attention to the pierogi in the east of Ukraine and Russia, about 1,000 miles to the south, we have our wonderful friends with shawarma and pita and whatever the heck it is. Not pita, but pita with an I. In Iran, and Iran is firing missiles at American bases and saying, I kill you.
Which is amazing. It's an interesting reaction. They need that complete capitulation in the new treaty. And yet they're launching missiles. Why they're doing that, I have no idea. Could it have been a rogue colonel in their missile force who did it? I doubt it. I think that they think that they are in such a position of strength that they can do whatever the hell they want. And they were simply retaliating for some imagined or real slight in the past. The problem is, as Michael alluded to earlier, that Israel is in big trouble if Iran is released from the relatively mild controls over their nuclear weapons program. The combination of $120 a barrel or more oil and the money that is probably going to be released to them is a recipe for catastrophe for Israel. That is the money that they will use to build the bomb. The question is, will the Arab world allow a bomb? And I know that JJ thinks they won't. I tend to agree with him. But only one needs to get through, and Jerusalem is gone, or Tel Aviv is gone, and Israel is in a tough place right now.
Yeah, I was going to say this morning. My rant is that what I don't understand is somebody commented. They say, well, you know, and I mentioned it's kind of makes no sense for them. You have this administration or junta in D.C. that is basically begging and pleading with them to please give us oil. We're going to sign this deal, and then some knucklehead in Iran decides to light off a few missiles and fire them, you know, on our bases in Iraq. Supposedly, there's a numerological aspect of it because it's the date represents both the hour is like the supposedly it's the it coincides with the death of that Qasem Soleimani terrorist guy from that Trump took out in the early Hal Scion days of the last vestige of normalcy in the beginning of 2020. But even still, it's just it makes no sense. I mean, and I said it's. These guys have got to be dumb beyond belief if it was intentional, because you have Biden ready to give you everything you want, and now you're launching missiles. What's the, you know, what did they ever think of the you know, I thought these mullahs would be the experts in the term of tequila and just say, yes, sir, we will give you anything you want. We will be very peaceful. And yeah, meanwhile, they'll develop the bomb and that'll be that. So it just doesn't, it didn't make sense for me from just trying to put myself in their mind, such as it is. You know, and they're crazy, and they want to bring about Armageddon for the 13th Imam. Why would they launch a missile when you have this guy in the palm of your hands? Now everyone's going. You know, it's theoretically puts a break on this deal if this deal is.
Well, I would say this. I've said this about the Russia situation. I would sleep better at night if I thought one single person in the State Department had ever read Tolstoy, or listened to Eugene Onegin by Tchaikovsky. You know, I come from my political views from a cultural perspective, and culture doesn't change. I'll give you an example. I'm in the middle of the First Crusade right now, especially as part of my book, but the third is one of the important ones. The Crusaders lost Jerusalem about 100 years after they had conquered Jerusalem, and they lost it to Saladin, which was the crusader name for this particular Kurdish Muslim warrior who was the first great general of the Muslim world in that period. And Richard the Lionheart went over in the Third Crusade and landed and took back the sort of semi-island city of Acre, and then marched his troops all the way down the Levantine coast to Jaffa, or Haifa, as it's called now. And that would be the launching point for his attack on Jerusalem. Saladin decided he was going to finish Richard off. Saladin was the hero of the Muslim world. He had driven the Franks out of Jerusalem and driven them into just the tiny coastal enclaves that they still kept. And Richard marched his army down in a brilliant formation. He took on Saladin's attack right when Saladin wanted to give it to him, and he beat the living shit out of Saladin. And at that point, Saladin's reputation among the Muslims collapsed, because when they get beat, they give up and they run. And when they're not beat, they'll push it. This answers your question, JJ. They'll do everything they have to do. My point is, the Russians are motivated in a part by a version of Orthodox Christianity, which says Kiev is the heart of Rus, and this is where the Slavic emperor was converted to Christianity. Moscow is calls itself the Third Rome. There was Rome, the center of Orthodox Christianity, beginning Christianity. Then there was Constantinople, where the Orthodox Church comes from, and that went to Moscow, which is why the Russians use a Greek alphabet. So they see this in terms of 1,000-plus years of history, and so does Islam. So that General Soleimani, or Soleimani, whatever he was, getting killed, they love these, you know, these dates. They're obsessed with it. And we see everybody, this is our fault as Americans, and I've lived much of my life overseas, so I'm only kind of half a good American. We see everybody as Americans. We do. We want to. We're nice guys. They don't. They see us as stupid, naive, loud, boorish, fat, you know, all these adjectives they apply. But they understand we don't understand their history, and they don't care that we don't understand history. They are going to keep to it. And I think the Iranians will keep going. They're Shias, and, you know, they hate the Sunnis, so that's the only good thing the Israelis got going for them is...
Yeah.
And one of the good things Trump did with the Abraham Accords, getting the Sunnis on the side of the Israelis. But it ain't going to end well, because they hate the Sunnis. One of the big fights, in fact, at the time the Crusaders took Jerusalem, was that the Turks had lost it to the Shia Egyptians. So there was no collaboration among the two branches of Islam to stop the First Crusade from coming in and literally slaughtering everybody in Jerusalem when they finally went in. The Muslim world doesn't unify, and that's been a lucky thing for us. And you know the Israelis know this, and they're doing their damnedest to keep these guys split apart.
It's interesting you mentioned that. There was an article, I think, in Front Page Mag last week, and I was a little bit – I sort of looked at it askance, and it's a damn good website. Somebody – I forgot who it was. Maybe it was whoever. Anyway, they were talking about this sort of – supposed rapprochement, or the beginning of it, between, of all people, Tayyip Erdogan from Turkey and the Israelis. And I'm going, what? That doesn't make any sense. This guy has been the most rabid Jew haters in the last, you know, since he's been there, since he's been took power. And I'm going, now there's a rapprochement. But what you're saying, Michael, about historical precedent with the Shiites and the Sunnis, and then, of course, with the coming together of the Abraham Accords, maybe this makes sense. I mean, obviously, I think Erdogan doesn't really like the mullahs, because he sort of fancies himself as King Arab, as Master Blaster would say in Thunderdome. But so he's maneuvering to have a deal with the Israelis, just to sort of, you know, for his own, you know, enemy of my enemy kind of thing, at least in the short term.
No, I don't think,
or it's something deeper. Who knows?
During the Crusades, for example, to go all the way back to 1099, Muslims fought with the Christians and against them. When Alexander went to conquer the Persian Empire with 42 guys and a set of steak knives, and managed to do it in like 2 weeks, steak knives. Yeah,
did you say steak knives?
That's why he's Alexander the Great. Okay. He conquered the entire Achaemenid Persian Empire with nobody. He was fighting against fellow Greeks,
and he found that Peter.
The Muslims will The Byzantines enlisted Turkish warriors on their side, even as they fought Turkish warriors. So there's no just kind of one metric that fits all here. And Erdogan, the Turks see, they conquered Constantinople, which is a big deal. If we ever could take Constantinople back, that would rearrange the Muslims' attitude towards a lot of things. But they saw that as a great victory over the Christians, and that they were now the caliphs of the entire Muslim world. And that's what Erdogan wants to be, caliph, head guy. So the Israelis, like the Brits, from whom they learned an awful lot, understand how to exploit these racial and ethnic and religious divisions among people that they're trying to keep calm, as the Brits did with the Indians, for example, and the Hindus.
But that speaks to the Muslim and Arab attitude toward power. They respect power.
Yeah.
And they also, unfortunately for us, they have contempt for weakness, and they see in America weakness. And that's why I think that's why they launched those missiles, because
that's
exactly why
they did. Yeah, yes, because they could.
And no one's going to do anything about it.
Right.
Going to embolden them, and maybe something more significant is going to get launched in a week or a month. So,
well, if I was ever running the State Department, and early on someone in the government said to me, I could put you in the State Department right now. And I said, why don't I just jump off the Empire State Building and get it over with faster? But if I was, I wouldn't look for striped pants people. I would look for scholars. I would look for people who speak the native languages and who understand the native literature and religious customs and how important these things are. We just blunder through the world, you know, like guys from Keokuk, Iowa, who've never been anywhere. And I think it harms America's interests, the way the Ivy League aristocracy has seized everything in this country. It's embarrassing.
Well, the whole, you know, you touched on it, Michael, a little while ago, and I want to hit the point of you know, we see people, or we want to see people that, they believe in peace, love, and harmony, just like we do. And that was this whole idiotic democracy project post 9/11, or even before that, where we're going to go in and create Jeffersonian democracy in places that are, you know, chopping people's heads off because, you know, they look at their sister wrong, or the sister is, you know, not wearing the yashmak. And it's the same thing. We can't, yes, I think one-on-one, maybe, yes, I'd like to teach the world to sing and buy the world a Coke and all that kind of chazarai. But at the end of the day, cultures, we have this whole notion of multiculturalism and we're going to somehow appeal to the better angels of their nature is BS. I mean, yes, it's hard to say this thing, but there are cultures that are superior to other cultures, such as, the classic Western culture is superior to many of the cultures, or if not all of the cultures around the world, because we are tolerant, contrary to what they teach you in the 1619 Project and Ibram Excrement's Jive Kampf, otherwise known as whatever the critical race nonsense. No, we are tolerant. We are wonderful people, but the world is a crappy place, and we sometimes have to do things and make alliances with less than savory people to get to keep ourselves safe here at home, and to try to make, you know, people who have not been, who are still in the 8th century or the 7th century, and try to bring them into the 21st and all this kind of stuff, which was the failing of Afghanistan, and to, I guess, a lesser extent or greater or lesser extent, Iraq and wherever else. Can't do that. It's insanity. And yet here we are. We're trying to do that again and again and again.
Until the
U.S. State Department understands the concept of family, tribe, and then country that is prevalent throughout the Arab and Muslim world, they will fail. But that's okay for them. They don't. There is no drive to be successful within the State Department and within our activity everywhere in the world. They want it to reflect our culture, which is, as you both have pointed out, absolutely impossible, because it is these are alien cultures. These are cultures that are, in my opinion and JJ's opinion, inferior to Western culture.
I think that's right. Alexander tried this, by the way, when he was conquering not only the known world, but the unknown world as well. And one of the things that caused trouble for him, so if he was poisoned, and he died very young at 32, this is the reason. He wanted his largely Macedonian army to marry the local women. So he did. He had a kind of giant marriage there. He felt that by blending the cultures, it would help keep the lid on things. And the Greeks didn't like that. And after his death, the most stable conquered territory for the Macedonian Greeks was Egypt, because the Ptolemaic dynasty, which had nothing whatsoever to do with the ancient Egyptians, purely a Greek imposition, created that. That's where Cleopatra comes from. She was a Macedonian Greek. The city of Alexandria was the most intellectually fertile city in the entire Roman Empire. It's where the Greeks and the Jews clashed constantly over every single possible interpretation of scripture. Once that began to happen, the real dynamic of that whole first century is not between the Romans and the Jews or the Romans and the Greeks. It's between the Greeks and the Jews in what was the Holy Land and in Alexandria. But the Greeks established a very stable Greek city and a Greek empire in that part of the world. That's the Byzantine Empire. Alexander was wrong, and his men didn't like it. That's the point. And they probably killed him for it.
On that pleasant note, let's take a little bit of a break. Yeah. as I get a shawarma and a falafel and contemplate a shashlik in my head. Cut Chip Newsletter Speaks, the podcast. Back in a second. And we're back, and this is going to be our final segment with CBD and Michael Walsh. Gentlemen, I guess the Ukraine and war is still going on. We still have insanity with the COVID nonsense and gasoline, and the economy is rapidly approaching Zimbabwe, or Michael mentioned Berlin, Weimar Republic right. Levels. What do you think?
Well, it's amazing how COVID suddenly disappeared. Somebody said, give Putin the Nobel Prize in Medicine for curing COVID in 24 hours by attacking the Ukraine. We didn't even touch on that, and that was 2 years of sheer fascism imposed for no reason whatsoever. And I do think it's a warm up for the Great Reset. Maybe we'll talk briefly about that. I've commissioned 18 essays. I wrote the introduction and the final essay of this book. But from writers like Conrad Black, Mike Anton, Roger Kimball, the late Angelo Codevilla, as many prominent center-right intellectuals as we could get our hands on and herd this band of cats. And Adam Bello, who's one of the best editors in New York, son of Saul Bello, bought the book, and we'll be out with it in October, so we're already in the production process, and it's a big one. It's 150,000 words, but it's 150,000 word J-damn bomb dropped directly on Davos, Switzerland, and the heads of Klaus Schwab and Prince Chucklehead of the House of Saxe-Coburg und Gotha in, that would be the Windsors.
Yes, it would be. That lovely name change.
And Battenberg. How did they get away with that, kid? Well, there you go. You don't never invite an Irishman and an Englishman to the same party, and this is one of the reasons why. We want this to have really major impact, so we'll be back to you guys, obviously, to help us push this project along. And we think it'll have a maximum impact. And what we're trying to do, in sort of a megalomaniacal way, is to unite all of the intellectuals in the Anglosphere to get on board against this typical Dr. Strangelove. Schwab actually sounds like Dr. Zell in Marathon Man. Is it safe? Yeah, is it safe?
Yeah, he's chilling.
He's a Bond villain. And so we're going to go after him and his whole cockamamie outfit here coming very soon.
Good.
So they're actually trying to drag COVID back into the news with this ridiculous, what are they calling it? The Delta / Omicron variant?
I think it's the Phi Beta Kappa.
Yeah, it's such crap. I speak from unfortunate experience with COVID. I had it. I was in the hospital, and I got out of the hospital, and I'm fine. But the thing is that the vast majority of people are going to be fine once they get COVID. It's going to moderate even more. Omicron is going to segue to an even milder version, and it will be what many of the, of that family of viruses is, and that is a cold.
Right, it's a cold.
But yeah. And of course, as Michael pointed out, there was no reason for this two-year reign of terror other than practicing for the next reign of terror.
Practice.
I have to say I am disappointed in many countries in the West. Too few of us understand that freedom is a delicate thing and can be crushed very easily. America should have fought back a lot harder, and I think it bodes ill for their next attempt. What the catalyst will be, I have no idea, but it's going to be ugly.
Well, it'll be global warming. That's what it'll be. That's what they're aiming at.
By a nuclear fire. But, you know, I wrote a couple of columns where, and I perhaps my verbiage was not good, and I put a headline. I wrote "Rootin' for Putin," and I say, you know something, I'm not. Vladimir Putin's a thug and a psycho, and it is completely reprehensible waging aggressive war against the Ukraine, whatever his reasons may or may not be, whatever it is. But at the same token, you've got to wonder about Vladimir Putin and why people like Klaus Schwab and everyone's favorite Nazi collaborator, George Soros, and what's his name, Larry Fink from BlackRock, and all these people are lining up against Putin and rushing to defend Ukraine. I'm going... It can't be out of the goodness of their heart. Either they're speculating wildly or Putin is against their plans. So, again, I'm not rooting for him so much as I'm rooting against them, because if whatever he is doing screws them up, even for one day, in preventing this great global reset, then, look, you know, as I said, sometimes, you know, it's an ugly, horrible world, but sometimes even for this moment, you have to kind of side with, and for lack of a better expression, a guy like Vladimir Putin, if this is what really is at the heart of this. And, you know, believe me, my heart bleeds for innocent people dying in war. But you know something? What's going to happen to this country and the rest of the world if they succeed? I don't even want to contemplate.
No, you don't. And you don't want to be part of it unless you want to live in a high-rise building and eat bugs and not own anything. And like it, you will like this once you have some nothings, yeah?
Yeah, so, Lord, my God.
Good Lord, I'm so happy that I speak German, because When I first went to Germany, and the Germans would say to me, "How come you speak such good German?" Yeah, I would say, "Selbstverteidigung," which means self-defense. I have to know what you guys are saying to me. Well, it's a mess. It's a mess, but we have to stand up and fight. What else can we do? The idea that death is somehow the penalty you pay for standing up for yourself, the Romans would not understand that concept at all. They thought that a good death, going down fighting for what you believe in, for country, for empire, for your gods, whatever it was the culmination of a man's life. Americans have become very weak and very crybaby and very afraid of everything. And the New York Times, which of course is the mother church of panic, constantly uses the words fears and worries. And it's like NPR, which I believe is recorded live in an insane asylum, somewhere in maybe Davos, Switzerland, you know, which is
or
where
the upper sun, but that's
or Biden's basement, really,
Biden's basement. But we got lots more to talk about, guys. I'll be happy to come back anytime you want,
Michael. It has been a pleasure. This has been absolute fascinating and wonderful conversation.
And I don't think we cursed even once, which disappoints me greatly. But perhaps we can remedy that in the next one.
Well, I just watched my tongue for a change, and I wanted to be a gentleman.
Well, I'll say in Hungarian, it'll be Buzzmeg, but I want to say something in German. Maybe our German audience will love that.
Yeah, the Scheißkerls out there are really a problem. So.
Und der Scheißkerl, unbelievable, my God. On that cheerful, Michael speaks the language of love, German, ladies and gentlemen.
I do.
On that cheerful note, this has been Cut Chip Newsletter Speaks, the podcast, episode 14. J.J. Sefton, the great Michael Walsh, and CBD. So long, and we'll see you next time in the Funny Papers.
Thanks for listening, folks. Time.
You might as we can, I know we can, can. Children, the little children of the world, 'cause they're our strongest hope for the future, the little bitty boys and girls. We got to
make this land a better land than the world in which we live.
Yeah, we gotta help each man be a better man with the kindness that we give.
I know we can make it.
I know that we can.
I know darn well we can work it out. Yes, we can. I know we can, can. Yes, we can, can. Or why can't if we want it, yes, we can, can.
I know we can make it work. I know that we can make it if we try.
Yes, we can, I know we can, can. Yes, we can.
Great gosh, you might
have. Yes, we can, I know we can, can.
Gosh, you're mighty.
Yes, we can. I know we can.
We can make it, y'all.
Yes, we can.